Did you know Tide has been upgraded to provide an even better clean and cold water? Tide is specifically designed to fight any stain you throw at it, even in cold. Butter? Yep. Chocolate ice cream? Sure thing. Barbecue sauce? Tide's got you covered. You don't need to use warm water. Additionally, Tide Pods let you confidently fight tough stains with new ColdZyme technology. Just remember, if it's got to be clean, it's got to be Tide.
Hey, kids, do you like wrestling? Well, we like wrestling, too. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Myself and Chris Novembrino kind of doing a lazy river of wrestling criticism, going through the news and whatever happened in stateside television wrestling. And also, you know what? Sometimes we just like to watch old stuff and talk about that, too. Love for you to give us a listen if you haven't already. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Kids, do you like professional wrestling? We like professional wrestling too. This week in the news, Vince McMahon gets a new lawsuit in the lazy river of professional wrestling. We preview NXT Halloween Havoc and Invader Club from my senior year of high school. Noah has selected Rowdy Roddy Piper versus Mr. Perfect Kurt Hennig from Madison Square Garden, December 28, 1990. This is Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is the aforementioned Chris Novembrino. Chris, I'm going to give you a choice of topics for the top of the show. You can either talking about Phil Lesh and his passing, the bassist for the Grateful Dead, or we can talk about how I recorded an hour of audio last night thinking that you had quit the show and that this was the last Shake Them Ropes, and my feelings about toxic wrestling media fandom.
Jesus. I just had work last night and got home and fucking collapsed.
Let me give some context here. I wrote Chris earlier, like Monday or Tuesday. It was a clip from Wrestling Observer Live, I think, and I had sent about Brian Alvarez talking about how maybe it was even Wednesday or Thursday, or like he's talking about AEW booking for the sickos. And how you can't book a show for the sickos. And there's a bunch of very...
And then nobody in the media...
Well, hold on. Yeah. There's a bunch of high-traffic Twitter accounts that start talking about how, you know, nobody on Wrestling Observer or Voices of Wrestling have warned us about this and never said anything about how booking for the sickos was a bad thing, et cetera, et cetera. And Chris had a nice little rant at me about how, hey... We've been doing this for all 5 years, et cetera, et cetera, and warning people and talking people and blah. And I read it. I was like, I'm going to need to give him a day to calm down here.
I mean.
And then I go back. I go, hey, tell me when you're available and what your match is for Vader.
Oh,
it was 2 days. I went, oh, he mad. He might have quit.
I'm not going to lie. If I cared about doing this show more, I would be much more angry about having essentially the last 5 years of our career. Well, like, it's frustrating to at once get dragged by assholes and then get no credit from the same assholes like years later. Like, pick a lane. And somehow we have managed to land in the worst of both possible worlds. And like, again, it would be more maddening if I was more invested in this now. Now I'm just like things like this happen. And it reminds me in a way, kind of what we do doesn't matter.
Yes.
And like in a way, the community sort of said this week, our shit doesn't matter. And they didn't even have to mention us by name. They just mentioned Voice of Wrestling never talks about, you know, how AEW's booking themselves into a corner. And we're the second longest running podcast on Voices of Wrestling. Thank you very much.
Well, it's interesting you say that because it also coincides with another piece of wrestling media where they think they're super important and they're not. There was a guy who has far more traffic than we do for some reason who claims he was thrown out of an AEW show because he was wearing a shirt for his podcast that's been critical of Tony Khan. And Tony Khan fears him, his opinion, and stuff like that. And I go, dude, this is the wrestling equivalent of the people of The View saying that if Donald Trump gets elected, they're going to be the ones thrown in prison. All right? They are so low on the ladder of people that anybody care. There's this thing about having a media platform where you think your reach is so much further than your grasp, and it's not really. I admit, look, I've been recognized in places, but it's been mostly for Fightful or people who know my voice or whatever, but I don't think I have any great
that
influence
happened to us
wrestling.
In 2016. I think like that's I that's kind of the wild thing is like it did happen to us in 2016 during WrestleMania weekend out in Dallas.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I saw that clip and it just really made me feel like a weird sense of futility. Like damn, this is like when I play a show with a band like that last Hondo Coyote show where I just feebly said at the end, thank you, Booth 13, to an empty restaurant.
Well, it's also interesting to me, and we'll get out of the meta discussion in a bit, but like there's an entire segment of this podcasting culture that thrives on ginning up their fandom to go after other aspects of this podcasting fandom, like all of the Conrad shows that go after Meltzer, or all the people who go like Vince Russo and Ben Hameen over there going after Sean Ross Sapp, when Vince Russo used to work for Fightful when I was over there. Now, I never had any interactions with Vince, but everything I had heard about his interactions with the Fightful people were nothing but nice. But now he's over there, you know, yelling about what a fraud Sean Ross Sapp is for, you know, mostly for clicks and for money. But it's just like, it reminds me of the story that came out this week of Stevie Nicks. And she was talking to Katy Perry. And Katy Perry was telling her, you know, Stevie Nicks says, I'm not on the internet. And Katy Perry goes, man, you know, all these other girls and stuff, they have such rancid fans and, you know, other things that are so mean and stuff like that. And she looks at Stevie Nicks and goes, who are your rivals? And Stevie Nicks just looks at her and goes, I don't have any rivals. I have friends. All these other singers are my friends. I don't have people that I'm in competition with. Get off the internet and you won't either. And it's one of those things.
Well, in fairness, like guys like the Eagles managed to find themselves in competition with others without the internet just fine, Jeff. Let's not romanticize the boomers.
Well, that's true, but that was mostly within themselves, too.
Right. And they didn't need the internet at all.
And Glenn Frey coming to blows after a show. If you've ever seen History of the Eagles, Glenn Frey's heel turn is one of the most shocking things in episode 2, where you go, what? I always thought Don Henley was going to be the one who turned heel. Nope. Yeah, so I had thought you had quit, so I recorded some audio that will now never make the light of day.
But
want to talk about Phil Lesh?
No, I don't. I saw a quote, though, today that's going to stick with me for a minute. I'm on Instagram and going through to my Instagrams, you know, gotten back to a healthy algo of like mostly music references. And I see the great and well coiffed, blessed with a great head of hair in his 70s, Pat Metheny, doing his thing. And I scroll down, Jeff, and I see a comment that's burned in my mind, which is, Pat Metheny would have been great in The Grateful Dead.
Was it from John Mayer?
And I'm just like, imagine looking at a Pat Metheny clip, and that's the takeaway. You watch it, you're watching him just like doing some dazzling shit. In this case, he was talking more about like technique and stuff, and then he would have been great in The Grateful Dead. Yes, I would have loved to have heard Pat Metheny shred over G, C, and D. That would have been fantastic.
Joe Satriani would have been great in Van Halen.
I mean, David Lee Roth's backing band. It's funny you say that. His backing band when he leaves Van Halen includes Steve Vai.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, and then you had Mike Anthony go to Sammy Hagar's band, which had a couple of
Buckethead. Yeah. You had Chickenfoot.
Yeah. Not.
Who among us doesn't love Chickenfoot?
Or Buckethead. My brother went to a show of his recently and wore a bucket on his head.
do you know how many albums that guy has recorded?
I do not.
It's like 500.
Get out of here, really?
No, he's one of the most prolific musicians alive right now.
All right, and people are probably yelling at us right now to get to I the don't, wrestling.
Oh, yeah, no. It was a banger week of wrestling, So I'm sure you want to hear us talk about Ethan Page and Trick Williams' engagement this week.
These are the good weeks, though, Chris, when the wrestling's bad and we had to suffer through it. This is why people listen to wrestling podcasts, is to hear us suffer through wrestling.
Did you not hear Brian Alvarez's quote and the response to it? No one listens to this crap.
A new lawsuit has been filed against Vince McMahon. Fightful reported that McMahon, his wife Linda McMahon, and TKO Group Holdings are being sued by five former ring boys who have accused former WWE employees of sexual abuse, as seen on the documentary Mr. McMahon. The lawsuit filed on behalf of John Doe's 1 through 5 by DeChillo Levitt and Murphy, Falcon, and Murphy claims that WWE employees Mel Phillips and Terry Garvin abused ring boys who were hired to assist with errands and other items, and that Mr. and Mrs. McMahon were aware of the abuse but did nothing to stop it. I sent you the filing. Did you get a chance to look at it?
I did. You know, what's funny is, and this is actually true, I didn't respond back to you because I then spent about 30 minutes reading through the filing with my roommate, and we were just going through not just the allegations, but I think the important parts in the latter half of the deposition, what the substantive claims that they are making. One of the ones that I feel like they have McMahon pretty much dead to rights on is that McMahon and the organization knew about Mel Phillips' conduct.
Yes.
I mean, the
separate locker room for him.
Yep. There's just too many things.
Linda McMahon being part of the meetings and things like that. That's going to be one. I think TKO is going to
have bringing him back,
settle.
But they're going to have to sell. This is bad.
They're going to settle. They're not going to indemnify, and they're going to leave the two McMahons to go at it. And I'm going to tell you something. I think politically, if Trump wins the election, he had been looking at Linda McMahon for Secretary of Commerce. There is no way in hell She's getting approved.
I think she gets a pardon. I think she's extremely innocent.
There's nothing criminally. Someone asked how they can have standing here after the statute of limitations, but Maryland is one of those states that has revised its laws about victims of sexual abuse and have taken away the statute of limitations, so that you can now do it long after the fact, especially because, you know, such memories are repressed, et cetera, et cetera. And there were actions that happened in Landover, Maryland at the Capitol Center, and therefore it fits the jurisdiction part too within the state. I think TKO is going to need to settle in this.
Yeah, this one's rough. I mean,
it was rough reading it, and
it's
just
a rough reading, and it's very well put together too. I mean, just all the extemporaneous wrestler stories, like Greg the Hammer Valentine's story, Sid's story, Sid Udy, I thought stood out among the anecdotal stories.
Do you remember that offhand?
I just remember that it ended with, oh God, there's a million of those with Mel Phillips. Like, it basically was one of those. There's the one where Stu Hart stretches Mel Phillips. That one's real tough for Vince because there's a lot of witnesses and stuff there where Mel Phillips had been crossing the line, and so basically they decided that they were going to have Stu Phillips stretch Mel Phillips.
Stu Hart, yeah.
Stu Hart stretch Mel Phillips.
That's the punishment. We're gonna have a wrestler wrestle you.
Well, yeah, but like
Stu Hart's stretching
was legendary.
Will still hurt you, but at the same time, I guess that's one of those we're gonna keep it in house and do the punishment that way. You know, like you're some sort of biker gang or something.
That's really a recurring problem with WWF from the 80s, right? Like, is this whole keep it in house? You know, starting with Snuka,
protect the business.
It's like, yep.
All right, you know. And God, that was one of the things that was driving me to say, well, maybe it's okay if it's our last show, because this business is built on scuzzy people. Like, you hear about like all the guys who were sleeping with underage girls in the 70s and 80s and things like, I mean, and now they've tried to go corporate and clean, and you find out, much like other criminal organizations, it ain't that easy just to go straight. It really isn't. And WWE being like this now public company that TKO had to know something about this in their due diligence when they took it over, and had to know that there might be a chance that these things could be revived at some time.
And then there's just this like steady body of turning a blind eye to this and turning a blind eye to that. And I think as time wears on, as I live through more of these events, just not just here, just in my own life, politics or whatever, staring a blind eye stuff. People who do this stuff really need, cancel culture needs to kind of come after that crap a lot more. Whatever you want to call it, I'm putting cancel culture here in air quotes.
Yes.
Like, but punishment, because like this turning a blind eye, not raising a hand when you could do something, not saying something when you could do something, it's just as pernicious, it's just as vicious, and it's what creates the enabling structure.
Well, it's being afraid of being in trouble if you say something, and you know, there's that, and everybody then starts to get all sympathy. Oh, well, you know, they were in a real tough position because they could have been fired, blah, 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 blah. You know, the same stuff with, like, Harvey Weinstein and stuff like that. And everybody knew, but everybody was making too much money. And the answer to all your questions is usually money.
I know. I just circle back to, you know, go back to that mid-20th century debate. Is just following orders good or bad when it comes to defending your actions?
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, hey, snitches get stitches. Yeah, well, snitches also like live a clean life most of the time too. So it's one of those things where I've never gotten that culture, but I'm also one of those people who can't lie very well. So yeah. Anything else on this?
No, I mean this is. I mean, in a way, I guess this helps Janelle Grant's case on the margins, in the sense of it further demonstrates the organizational knowledge about all these activities.
It's funny you say that, because Janelle Grant's attorneys came out with a PR statement pretty much saying what you just said right there.
That's funny. Yeah. I said on the margins. I want to be clear. I said on the margins. I don't know if that's going to help him in the courtroom.
I think Janelle Grant's attorneys talk too much, but I've already said that before. I think they are correct in their case, but I think being out in the media a little bit too much, this just comes from me working at a law firm where you'd often hear the attorneys that are talking to the media a lot are the ones that are losing their case, and I kind of get a little bit nervous about that sometimes. Samantha Irvin resigned from WWE, and she had apparently done this earlier in this year. Her statement to fans of WWE was that she wanted to do other projects, and that working with WWE had not given her that permission. There's, of course, speculation, because her fiancé is now in the other company, that she no longer wanted to work in that company as well. Here's where it gets a little bit scuzzy, and where I was also talking a little bit about wrestling media and the relationship with wrestling, Chris. Apparently, it was leaked by WWE PR to PW Insider to report that she had quit in catering prior to the show that night to leave them in a lurch. This has been denied by others.
But PW Insider just went ahead and reported that without getting a second. What's it that check two sources and then go with the one that's cool?
And in related news, just so happened that Lillian Garcia was there that night, and she is now back in the WWE fold full time. Look,
well, I love when they zoomed in on her and she duffed a word. That was rough.
Look, I like the straight ahead ring announcers of the past. I dig Finkel. I always liked when he said, and knew it was great. Modern ring announcers have never done much for me, but I understand how people were fans. I kind of liked Samantha Irvin's take on it. She brought a little bit of personality here and there. I think her going viral in terms of being kind of a more than an NPC got to be a bit much at times. But other than that, she was fairly inoffensive. I don't know if she'd be a great pickup for AEW. I don't know if she wants to do AEW. I think she wants to do music, which is always, I want to put out my album. All right.
Well, I mean, Lillian Garcia tried to do that too.
Yeah, I know. And that this is the same path I think we're on again. I think in five years, we'll have Samantha Irvin back in WWE probably.
And I just say too, especially if she's not writing the songs and she doesn't, you know, maybe I'm not understanding her act well enough. I think she's more of a singer than a songwriter.
Yes.
So that is much easier to do on the road. There's a less demanding workload. You're not writing songs. You're just singing the ones that are written for you. You could do that pretty much anywhere.
Studio time though, Chris.
I don't understand quitting WWE for a music career. And this is coming from a musician. Like it is just a singer. She's not about to break out as the next big Kelly Clarkson or something.
No, she is in her mid-30s. She did, I believe it was America's Got Talent. She was on one of those shows. It was either that or American Idol. I can't remember which, but she was a flute player on one of those. Or maybe that was the beauty pageant. But it's also, see, you can't understand the music part. I can't understand the, I'm quitting so I can go to the other company and work with my husband. If that's any part of the reason, because I think you need separation at times. I've seen lawyers who work together, and I've seen lawyers who got married. I've seen lawyers who've gotten divorced. It's one of those things where it's like you need your own kind of career places at times.
I have a lot of respect for Buddy Murphy and Rhea Ripley being able to go where they are going to be the most utilized and get the most money.
But he wants back. But he wants to go back to WWE.
Well, yeah. Well, he was the most utilized a couple of years ago, and now the House of Black just does shit, you know? Like everything.
No, that killed me. But, there was something else I was going to bring up. I can't remember what it was now.
Wouldn't you want to go back to WWE at this point if you were most of these guys?
Probably. I don't know. It kind of coincides with there was a Joe Lanz over on the flagship talking about WWE PR trying to make Dave Meltzer look bad by leaking that Kevin Owens is negotiating with AEW or wants to negotiate with AEW when he's possibly signed a couple months ago type of a thing. Yeah, it's just everything. Look, we don't have sources. This is why we don't report news. So
no, we get to
but
do
we do
news
have a couple
analysis.
Sources. Yeah, we just do analysis. We're TV critics. That's all there is to it. Tony Khan changing some business. He says that the incident with Forbidden Door, where Stephanie Vaquer basically got pushed on AEW television only to then use that as leverage to sign with WWE, will be a thing of the past. Seems like smart business to me, but on the other hand, Chris, there might just be some people you just want to bring in once, and that's it.
Right.
I don't.
This is the New Jack theory of booking, right? You don't need New Jack every week. You need him once.
Yes. It's
Abdullah the Butcher. You don't need him every week. You need him for like 4 weeks maximum.
I think they're taking this hard because it was rumored that Stephanie Vaquer was going to sign with AEW.
I don't think she would have been. She would have been a nice adjunct on their roster, but she's not a game change in terms of business.
No, no, not right now. And I think she was great on NXT. We're going to talk about that in the Lazy River a little bit. TKO bringing on several new properties already within the Endeavor family into their fold. Announced Thursday morning, the parent company of WWE and UFC are acquiring Professional Bull Riders On Location and IMG from Endeavor in an all-stock deal valued at $3.25 billion. If I had one wish, Chris, it would be that Professional Bull Riders would be like that old... Remember when they tried to meld monster trucks in professional wrestling?
Oh, hell yeah. The Gravedigger and The Undertaker squared off.
Yeah, I need that for Professional Bull Riders. Either the riders are babyfaces and heels, or they're like babyface riders and heel bulls. And maybe you get like a Mr. Ed thing where some heel bull, listen, Johnny, you can't ride me for that 6 seconds. We can make professional bull riding far more interesting than it is right now.
Oh, I think there's a lot of things. Like you could have two bull riders fighting over Miss Daisy or something like that. Here she is, Miss Daisy. Oh, Miss Daisy, I do so love you.
Whoever stays on El Toro the longest will have my heart.
I'm going to do that. I own the big oil ranch.
Yes, we're going to have evil oil barons.
The big oil ranch.
That's J.R. Harrison. The Harrison oil ranch.
I hate the little man.
I crushed a union once in my younger days.
Smells like pores here at this bull riding exposition.
Yes, he comes out the king of the show. All you poor white trash from Lubbock, Texas. You
don't. I went to college in Boise.
Oh, and not trouble in paradise, but at least something that WWE needs to learn. Fightful Select's Corey Brennan learned that NXT was scheduled to run up until 10 p.m. Eastern exactly and sign off on the air after pre-planning from those on brand to hit their mark. But producers became aware that the Orlando CW affiliate feed was operating on a 20-second delay, as was many CW affiliate feeds that cut off the end of the program. Other officials had previously confirmed with satellite providers that the show would stay on the air until 10 p.m. Officials in NXT were said to be, quote-unquote, very upset with the show being cut early, with one NXT source noting that, quote, everyone who runs or has a say in the show was pissed. Sources that Sean Ross Sapp spoke to said that these problems have been anticipated in the weeks leading up to the CW debut, as they have hard outs to get off the air. Previously, NXT had a lot more flexibility on the USA Network. Now, if you missed the last 20 seconds, you missed Zariah showing up as Fatal Influence was spinning the wheel to say, hey, we get to choose whatever we want for Halloween Havoc.
Okay, so that would be a good reason for them to be pretty miffed. This was not like 20 seconds of Trick Williams holding up the belt. No.
Yeah. This was a debut right at the end of the show, which is the perfect time to debut somebody.
Yeah, really let it sink in as we go into Doogie Howser reruns.
Well, I think CW affiliates, I think it's that, you know what it is? It's that local news teaser that they do, you know, coming up at 10.
Oh, the stinger.
Yeah, the stinger right before the local it jumps to the local news type of thing. Like, stay tuned for.
Yeah. I used to have to caption those. I used to have to caption those hits. Yeah. You'd be like listening and then be like, coming up, the weather at 10 o'clock, blah, blah, blah.
And giving equal time for clowning, Jim Cornette and Mick Foley cut promos to their fans to vote for Kamala Harris. Mick Foley taking an undue amount of trash for promoting Kamala Harris by trashing Donald Trump's legacy with women, whereas Mick also will not criticize Vince McMahon for his legacy with women. Chris, any thoughts on this?
Oh, okay, Mick, if you're not willing to go there, then you probably should have stuck with January 6th and not, you know, gone the glass houses route. I don't think Jim Cornette's going to help a ton in swing states, but Smoky Mountain Wrestling was an extraordinarily popular promotion back in the 1990s.
This is, again, Chris, people overrate their fame in this sphere.
I know what you're saying, but a lot of people love that Nature Boy Buddy Rogers, where he kind of, or Buddy Landell, where he kind of turns around. Yeah, no, that touched the hearts of millions.
Hey, I have some, I'm going to use my fame as a soapbox to do good. And you're just like, and maybe it's just my being turned off because I think voting and other things are especially personal type of a thing. And I kind of get, I thought, what's the Undertaker going to talk to Trump about? But on the same note, here's the opposite side of the coin. I'm just like, all right.
No, I'm with you on this. I think at long last, it's a wonderful thing to get, if you have a platform, to get out and encourage people to vote.
Yes, but don't tell them who to vote.
Exactly. If you care enough about an election and you want someone to vote, I dig it. Do that. Yeah. Encourage people to vote. You know, I like this election's coming up. You can even say, like, I think it's an important election. But, like, anything beyond that is
proselytizing.
It's proselytizing, but, like, especially in the American system, you're really hitching your own personal wagon to a jerk.
That's kind of true. Now that I think about it, I have to ponder this a little bit more. Maybe all politicians are jerks. Maybe we can go with that. We can unify around that. Everybody go out there and do the Montgomery Brewster, none of the above.
No, go and vote. But like, I would certainly not be publicly hitching my wagon to a jerk this time around.
Numbers, AEW 637,000.19 in the demo, NXT 702,000.16 in the demo, depending on how you read it, your side won.
Outstanding, banner week for both companies. They both kicked each other's asses.
Yeah. We're going to now start with the lazy river of wrestling criticism, and instead of going directly into the Halloween Havoc preview, I want to bring this up because this was a source of contention once again. On the aforementioned wrestling internet in some ways. Chris, were you able to see Raw at all?
Yeah, I was very able to see Raw at all.
Okay, did you see the Carlito exchange with one Adam Pearce and the line when he walked into the room and Io and Kyrie were leaving and he says, man, I got to learn some Chinese?
Oh, yeah, I did hear that.
Okay, so you obviously did not have a strong reaction to that necessarily. A lot of people did.
I get that. Carlito is a jackass.
Yes.
That's the character. He's a dummy. Like, he's like an R-Truth type, like a heel version of an R-Truth.
It's an R-Truth line.
Right. It truly is. It's an R-Truth sort of line. Like I could totally hear R-Truth just real quickly going like, man, I don't even understand Chinese. Like, and like someone just like looks at me like, Truth, they're Japanese.
Yeah. They needed the stinger on that.
Yeah.
On the joke is what they needed to
Pierce actually should have said they're Japanese and been very annoyed at Carlito. Just like basically sort of, served as the proxy for the outraged internet fan.
Yes, because in the room, when you're writing that kind of a joke, it's obvious to everybody that they're Japanese because they've hit over the head that these are Japanese superstars here and that, you know, that kind of thing. And look, I listened to everybody who were angry, and a lot of it were using it as a proxy because they hate WWE. It's like, how could they let something this racist make the air, et cetera, et cetera. And I understand that in some ways. But my personal position is it wasn't funny enough to be outraged, and it wasn't racist enough to really, you know,
if it wasn't an ad lib, it was not funny enough to include in the script. So
that's the official position, is that it was ad-libbed by Carlito to either to throw him under the bus or to save the writer. I don't know which.
Right. Like, I mean, and again, like,
but to me,
it works to me with the, like,
it's with Carlito's character, it works.
Right, it's super consistent with everything we've known about Carlito.
Yes.
Up to and including Raquel going like, the hell do you even do here?
Yes.
And him having to be like, oh, I'm the fixer. It's like, I've been joking about for weeks that he's the true leader of the Judgment Day because he's like the hapless boob of the Judgment Day.
He's a loser who thinks he's cool.
Right.
And he was trying to be cool, like thinking he could, like, he's the old guy at the club thinking he could still score women and stuff like that. It's to me, and I think I know the way out of this. If I were a writer with WWE, here is what I would pitch. He actually goes out and learns some Chinese. And then he tries to use that to hit on Kyrie and Io, who then absolutely emasculate him and probably kick him in the head in some way and just leave him lying. And Io, you know, Io can deliver broken English pretty well. We're Japanese, stupid, you know, and just leave, you know. And then you've addressed the elephant in the room kind of thing. You've solved the problem. Carlito's more of an idiot right now, and you haven't damaged damage control, which seems to be the big concern here.
I guess maybe my other thought is it's like, I'm fine with having this level of granular discourse around a Carlito one line, but I feel like we could have this level of discourse on a fairly regular basis about problematic crap that happens on the other brand's show too.
Well, it just so happens like Tony Storm cut a promo for CMLL, you know, about Mexican food. And I went, these are pretty much kind of the same things. Oh, but she was in character. I'm like, Carlito wasn't? Kind of a thing. It was just very, very weird. The standards shift depending on what the company is in some ways.
Right. Yeah, I really do feel that. I mean, this is on a line. I would say it's not funny enough to include in the scene.
Yeah.
But also that it's not an inconsistent idea with Carlito. I just think there's other ways to show that he's a boob other than this.
Agreed. With that, we'll go to a preview of this Sunday's Halloween Havoc for NXT. 5 matches announced. I am very, very meh about this card, with the exception of the women's tag match in here, Chris. That go-home NXT...
Jeez.
While it had a lot of female empowerment on it, because, man, that's one thing that NXT does that AEW does not, is that they're at least trying to show that their women's division is just as equal as the men's over there. I don't know if they're doing a good job of it, but they're trying things. They're putting people on screen in vignettes in NXT High School. NXT High School's back, Chris. I'm so excited.
I don't love the Carmen Petrovic character that she stumbled on, but yeah, dude, like, they're getting her screen time and she's getting ring time.
Nikita Lyons talking about being on the prowl as she and Oba Femi locking eyes. You know, it's trying things. I don't know if they're good things, but it's trying things.
I thought we were going to get heel Nikita Lyons, and I was kind of here for that.
I was thinking that, too. I've always thought she was kind of heelish anyways.
Yes.
No, and while we're here, I'm just going to go over one thing that has nothing to do with this show, because I think it's going to be resolved on television this next week. We have now gone so far down beating down Javon Evans that he's now a heel. Right? That was what that whole thing was about, slapping Nathan Frazier and getting mocked by Wesley. What are we doing? How have we ruined something pure and good and exciting by just beating him? It's the Roxanne Perez issue where, oh, she's so good. Now we need to turn her heel because she's not interesting and we can't do anything with good people.
Well, I mean, she's at least good as a heel.
She's decent as a heel. I won't deny that. But it's just one of those things where it's just like with Javon, it's like, stop beating him on television.
They did too much with him too fast, and he was just not ready. I'm sorry. I've said it before. I'm not going to do the full rant again. But there's like any number of people that they've had in the last 5 to 7 years who were closer for this level of push than Javon Evans. He does not have the character work necessary to do this. He does not have the physical selling right now. necessary to do this. He does not have the in-ring storytelling right now necessary to, like, the match calling and all those. There's so many things missing, but the big one remains. There's no character here. That's gonna continue to ripple into his time as a heel. He's got no character.
Yeah.
He's gonna be Wesley Light.
Young guy who loses. That's his character. That's what they were telling him his character was on TV. Oh, you have a good future ahead of you. You'll get that win eventually.
Young Og.
And meanwhile, you watch other wrestling from like the past, like by 20, they were in the business for 4 years and they were already looking for, like, they've already had like a title reign or looking to add a title reign. It's amazing how long it takes people to mature in the business these days. All right, here we go. NXT Halloween Havoc live from Hershey, Pennsylvania. Kalani Jordan, your champion, versus one member of Fatal Influence, either Fallon Henley, JC Jane, or Jasmine Nix, in a spinner's choice match to be determined for the NXT Women's North American title. Chris, what will the stipulation be and who's going to win it?
God, I love a spinner. I think it's going to be like a tables match or something like that. And I think Kalani Jordan wins it still. I don't think they're gonna put the, well, maybe it is time to get this belt off of Kalani Jordan. Maybe Jasmine Nix beats Kalani Jordan.
Oh, God. Out of all three of Fatal Influence, that's the one you want to have the title.
It'd be JC Jane, obviously.
Fallon. I'll take Fallon as a champion too. I think she's the best wrestler of the three, even though I like JC the most. Because you're on the right track, Chris. I'm gonna tell you what this is gonna be: a 3-on-1 handicap match, no DQ, and eventually, probably Damage Control is gonna come out and knock out two of them, and then Jasmine Nix is probably gonna eat the pin here, so that Kalani Jordan retains. But the match is gonna start out: if any one of us pins you, we get the title. There's gonna be a little bit of infighting here to tease an eventual breakup. And then two people from I don't think it's going to be Jade and Bianca. I think it's going to be Damage Control due to what happened on Tuesday. Are going to come out. They're going to clear the ring of Fallon and JC, and then Kalani Jordan's going to pin Jasmine Nix. That's what I think.
Yeah, I think that's something like that.
That sound good? Okay.
Yeah.
Because Kalani has been all over this show for a while. I don't think they're ready to take the title off of her yet. And they're not yet ready to do the Chris Novembrino heel turn, which he so desperately, desperately wants.
Turn this annoying perfectionist heel. She's an unrelenting, obnoxious
Chris, it's now become my favorite part of NXT is watching Kalani Jordan and imagining you watching her as a heel. And just like, yeah, see, that's a bad person right there.
Strivers, Jeff, Strivers.
Andre Chase versus Ridge Holland in an ambulance match. I'm kind of here for it. I think Andre Chase over-delivers in his matches for being such a dorky character. But I just can't see them beating Ridge Holland after they finally have made the turn and stuff. Because here's the reason. If you give Andre Chase the win and the victory for Chase U, you're right back to zero and you have nothing else to do. So
that's actually where I think this is going, though.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, Holland's going back up to the main roster to join Pete Dunne.
All right.
Yeah, and so this is going to be resetting the roster. Chase gets rid of it. And, yeah, and I mean, you
with
know,
the
they
with the help of who's the big
Riley Osborne?
No,
Duke Hudson.
Duke Hudson and maybe Thea Hale. Maybe they all. It's no DQ, so all of Chase U can get in on the act, and then they send Ridge Holland up to the main roster through an ambulance. Okay.
Yeah.
I can be talked into that. I thought Ridge Holland was going to win this originally, but I hadn't thought about bringing him back up because why would you bring Ridge Holland back up when he hasn't really morphed into any kind of character really? But I guess.
That's the problem with Chase U, right? Like Chase U doesn't lead to anywhere for anyone involved in the Chase U storylines.
Right. they do the Chase U storyline, and then they're back to being Chase U. And you're like, all right.
It didn't help Duke Hudson, hasn't done anything for Thea Hale, and Riley, what's his name, is there.
Osborne.
I know his name.
They're six-year seniors, and they haven't learned anything in this whole time in school. Damn it, go to the next level of math.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
In the match I'm looking most forward to, Roxanne Perez and Cora Jade versus Julia and Stephanie Vaquer in a straight-up tag team match. Julia and Stephanie versus Fatal Influence, the Fel and Henley JC Jane match. I personally enjoyed it. I know a lot of people think Julia's the one, but man, Stephanie Vaquer and just her smirk and her in-ring charisma during the match, I think she's already ahead of Julia in NXT right now. I did enjoy doing the son of a bitch elbow from the Outrunners. that was interesting, but I'm looking forward to this match. I still think Roxanne somehow makes it out of there, or maybe Julia and Stephanie both pin Roxanne since it's just straight up, and then it turns into a three-way for the title at whatever the next pay-per-view is or whatever. But I'm looking forward to the match overall. Who do you got in this, Chris? And any
Yeah, I think the new girls beat the old girls.
Any thoughts on that, on Julia or Stephanie and how they're doing so far? Do you like them? Because I don't think you're very, I mean, I don't think you've watched a lot of matches with either of them.
I think that the characterization in the vignettes is so generic. In the past, we've been calling for them to do subtitles.
Yeah.
So that you can have more nuance and depth and storytelling in the characters rather than burdening someone like a Kairi Sane with trying to make her way through the English language, which is not always a smooth sail for her. You can actually just get across nuances and depths of their character. And watching Vaquer and Julia's thing this week, it's like, we are from different places. We both want to be champions. Like, if they couldn't, I mean, anyone could say that crap.
You're right. You're right. And it's so on the nose. It's just the generic, I am a traveler from a strange land, and I have come to win your title, sir.
Holy crap. Like, give them a note card. They can learn to say that in English. Like, the reason you do subtitles is to bring out nuances, like maybe bring out like a slight tinge of arrogance in Julia, or, you know, bring out a vulnerability in Stephanie Vaquer, or a vulnerability in Julia, or a sense of like slight contempt for one. Like, you can use subtitles and pre-writes to tease out nuance, and I found that this didn't do that at all. I'm a traveler and a stranger in a strange land.
We were rivals once, but now we have come together to vanquish.
Dude, don't get me wrong. I love Karate Kid. Great movie.
No, I hadn't thought about how generic it is with the subtitles and how just they're doing the bare minimum. You're exactly right with this. It's like, it would be like giving Io this thing. I am the genius of the sky in right. Japanese. Well, you already say that in English. Why does she need to say that in Japanese right now? There's no need for it. Tell me something about her. Tell me something about her journey. Tell me something about why she's come to America to be a wrestler.
Let me hear pride in her voice.
Yes.
Let me hear hate in her voice.
Yes.
Let me hear sorrow or vulnerability in her voice. I don't even have to understand what she's saying. I just need to hear it in the inflection. But yeah, like whenever I am a traveler from a distant land. You can't get anything from that.
Many moons I have walked through the deserts of the world to come to NXT to
wrestle. I trained hard as a young person in my home country to one day arrive here in this country to live my dream. And no one is going to stop me from reaching the top.
Look, Saray was at least an exchange student.
Oh, poor Saray. It's okay, Jervon. Go back to the who had more going with it at this point. Saray. Saray was a much better tech.
She at least got to change into something magical and then do it. And
no, and she was a good wrestler too. She's a very good wrestler.
Still a good wrestler. She's over in Stardom, killing it right now. Tony D'Angelo versus Oba Femi in a tables, ladders, and scares match.
I hate this. I hate everything about this. I hate Tony D'Angelo and Oba Femi as a feud. I hate Tony D'Angelo as a character.
The match can only be won by pinfall? Yes, go ahead. Sorry.
He has had one of the dumbest years in wrestling of any wrestler. I would stand like I think when we get to December, please remind me to do a year in D'Angelo as a segment on here, because he, from the feud with Charlie Dempsey to whacking Drew Gulak to this infinity feud with Oba Femi that has been rocky and then turned in whatever the hell this is this week. He's a face. He's a heel.
Yes. There you go. You've nailed my problem with it, is that now he's back to being a heel again.
Is he?
Oba Femi just destroyed his entire family.
Oba Femi. Oba Femi, yes. Yeah, Oba Femi is, definitely.
Oh, no, I thought Oba Femi was the baby face right now.
No, he's the heel.
Well, Tony D'Angelo beat him and then just just sent his minions after him, I guess. I don't know.
I know, right? Like, this is the thing. You and I are legitimately debating this right now. We're not, like, to be clear, we're not working right now.
I don't know.
I'm on the other side. My read is the opposite of yours, and that's how bad
this
is.
The audience is still chanting, oof, you know, every time Oba Femi comes out, so I assume he was the baby face still.
It's not exactly a Mr. Perfect and Roddy Piper thing where they're both heels and going at it either. Like, D'Angelo's like the lovable crime family. Yes. I hate it so much.
It's like the people who watch Penguin, and it's like I've been watching it, and the Penguin is the least interesting character in that damn show for me, even though Colin Farrell has like a bunch of cake. He's basically doing like a bootleg James Gandolfini impression, and it's like it's okay, but everybody's like going, this is great television. I'm like, it's okay. Kristen Milioti is really the star of that show, but nevertheless, it's spin the wheel, make the deal, tables, ladders, and scares. Which I, Chris, you remember the Miz versus Damian Priest and the zombies?
Yes,
I think we're getting zombies again. The match can only be won by a pinfall. I think we're getting zombie mobsters. We're gonna get a pinfall because, like, zombie mobsters, something dumb that's gonna make me hate wrestling and hate talking about is gonna happen.
I'm 100% at, like, least favorite wrestler of the year is gonna be Tony D'Angelo. I feel very, very
that
confident.
Bad, huh? See, okay.
He's gonna be my, like, least favorite wrestler of 2024. There's not a chance.
I gotta think of who my least favorite wrestler is. He's
not even untalented in the ring.
No,
it's just that they give him crap after crap after crap, and when you think it can't get any dumber or more incoherent, somehow they find a way to make it dumber and more incoherent.
And then Trick Williams versus Ethan Page, Devil's Playground match.
Thank God we're having this match again, just like the Oba Femi one.
I don't get it either. I don't get why why is Ethan Page trying to garner sympathy for me in the go-home promo? Why?
When he was saying all this stuff, I was kind of like, he's right, though.
Yes.
Yeah, Trick really is kind of the heel in terms of, fortune has just favored you your whole life. Like, you've been on, you know, when you go in the airport and they've got those little walkways that move you towards where you're trying to go further down the hallway a little bit faster. Trick Williams has been walking on one of those little walkways and making killer time. And of course he's moving his legs, but he's got a track underneath him that's been gliding him along that path. And Ethan Page has had a much longer road to get there.
This is MJF versus Adam Cole, though, in a lot of ways to me, where it's just like, I don't want the villain origin story. I don't. I just want him to be a bad guy.
I'm with you on this too. It was weird because to me this is yet another moment where Ethan Page kind of, you know, is baby facey.
Yes.
Well, it was like when Joe Hedry decided to like put pictures of Ethan Page half naked on the Titantron screen for no reason. That's a heel move.
It is. No, I agree. It's like,
if you, okay. Like, I have boxers. I don't think I look horrible by boxers, but if you flash like a photo of me and my boxers, like up on the TV screen for public embarrassment, you're the heel.
You know what this is? This is the classic WWE story where if the WWE didn't make you, you're not it. So it's like, I've been going to all these companies and wrestling here and there and struggling to get here to WWE, and all you did was walk in, and you were big and tall, and you're a great, and I'm a great wrestler, and you're just a sports entertainer, and blah, blah, blah. And it's all that kind of weird meta crap, all, even though they didn't really do that here, but it still has that kind of tinge of it to me, where it's like, yeah, you've been the guy who's worked hard and come in to get a championship shot. And here's the guy that WWE likes, who is the champion. And you're just like, oh my God, no, stop this. Just have him be, I hate you because you're a good person. There we go. Boom. now we have a wrestling feud. Congratulations, everybody.
Yeah. I hate this. I think Ethan Page wins the title back.
No, God. No. Okay. I hope not. I can't, the reason I was so strong on that reaction was I can't wrap my head around that. I can't wrap my head around.
I can't
they just
wrap
gave
my
back
head
the
around putting Trick Williams as champion again.
I can't believe they're doing all these rematches so soon. It's
none
like,
of this. Not like Obafemi and Tony D'Angelo should have been effing done.
Yes.
When you did the Rocky storyline. Yes. So I have no idea why this is happening again.
Well, there's four Rockies. No, I don't care. I don't effing care.
We didn't kill Luca Crucifino. That would have actually been okay. Like, killing Stax would have been all right at this point. He didn't do anything. In this case, like, I think you move Trick Williams onto the main roster here. Or you got to get one of these two guys off of this brand ASAP.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You move Page up or you move Williams up, one of the two.
I don't see where they fit in any of these rosters, though. That's the other thing. It's just, well, maybe for like a debut.
Then
Netflix.
You fire both of them.
Maybe for a debut for Netflix, you bring up Trick. Okay, I can see that.
Carmelo and Trick could be a team on SmackDown again. They've never had more like charisma than they did when they were actually a team.
That's actually quite true. It is your turn. Where would you like to go on the river?
Oh boy, this is a rough week. I'm trying to think like what stood out to me. I did see Chris Jericho do a version of Killing in the Name of this week with Swerve Strickland. that was certainly something. Sammy Guevara, Shelton Benjamin. I'm enjoying Shelton Benjamin coming back here. AEW is a nice forum to see Shelton do Shelton things. And, you know, like, yes, the matches tend to be overly long, but, like, I haven't seen Shelton do his thing in a minute. I just enjoy Shelton. He's good.
Want to take another one, or you want me to go?
You go. I mean, these are not long.
I enjoyed MVP's promo backstage with Ricochet quite a bit.
Yeah.
It's everything I want in a Gary Hart type of manager. They finally found their manager, and he's going along, and he's saying, we're here to win titles. We're here to make money. We're here to do this. And then a line that took me so far out of this promo, it made me angry. We're taking over. At the same time, you have a Moxley story where he's trying to take over AEW. And I'm just like, no, we need to stop this. Because it all ties in a little bit with the Mox story, which we still don't really know what his deal is with the company. He just has a problem with the company and all the young wrestlers in it and these kids today. And it's a bit of a meta punk story. At the same time, it's probably a bit of a meta Moxley story with thinking that young people aren't driven hard enough for making money and things like that. But it goes into a larger issue of their subtle but stupid storytelling, which is now happening with Adam Cole and Roddy. It's happening with Kip Sabian and Christian, and it's happening with Moxley too. It's the we're trying to be clever with the underlying motives of people here and there, blah blah blah, instead of just saying what the hell the deal is, because the mystery and the reveal of the mystery is not going to be as cool as what the character is right now. I want to know.
No, I know. Kip Sabian, the second he came back, once it was revealed that he's a heel again, I'm like, cool, I don't give a shit about this guy.
I know why you took my pen. Who cares? Who cares why he took your pen? It's a stupid pen. There's no money in Kip Sabian for the most part. He's a fine wrestler.
No, it was more interesting if Kip Sabian, for reasons unknown, was hunting down Christian's family and was just he being like sort of Christian's like Sting from the rafters. This guy who's always coming out of the crowd and always attacking Christian and the family, and it goes on for weeks on end, maybe months.
Yeah.
And we never actually know what Sabian's motivation is for a couple of months. I think that actually would be way more intriguing. I know that would be more intriguing than what we got.
Okay, Mox's story is that AEW has made wrestlers soft. Okay, cool. Why is Pac and why is Marina Shafir involved in this? And why is Wheeler still kind of a little bit hesitant and kind of has to be smacked into doing things?
Well, and why aren't they punishing him anytime he shows softness?
Yes, and also, why aren't they going after things that Moxley would hate, like the Learning Tree or the EVPs? Instead, they're going after the Dork Order. And of course, like John Silver, who can't keep a straight face in anything he ever does, and he's running after pickup trucks and stuff for comedic effect. I'm just, it's not, and you know, and Cole and Roddy doing the whole, oh, I want to go after him. I want to go after, you know, it's just, and when we all know that one of them screwing the other pretty much kind of a thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think MJF's going to have turned Roderick Strong in the entire Undisputed Era.
I don't think it's that. I think we all know that. I think we know what's going to happen here is that they're going to have two wins apiece and then they're going to have to face each other. And that's going to be his thing. And then it's probably going to turn into a three-way. And then one will turn on the other, et cetera, et cetera. But they're all being real coy about such things. And it's just, it's trying to be not subtle, but trying to be cute with the mystery when we don't really know what's going on. Like, why did Adam Cole decide to quit the Undisputed Kingdom when it was his plan to be the devil and the devil's worshippers, and they were going to form a gang and they were going to be together. And, you know, they gave that nice little talk, but he never really gave it a reason why he decided to strike out on his own after coming back from injury. It was just, all of this is just ridiculous at times. We're in a straight ahead, I don't like you, will do. It's your turn. Go ahead.
Well, and then to have the entirety of the young or like the dork locker room outside
for 2 hours,
and then get end runned around by the BCC. I mean, yes. like the French in World War II. Like, come on, man.
Oh, and the other one was that there. I mean, here's how you can tell there's kind of people who aren't necessarily great writers, or they don't trust their audience. I don't know what it is. I call it, on Wednesday on the show, on the Dynamite show, I called this kind of an improv crutch type of a thing when you're trying to tell your scene partner information he doesn't know that he should know. When Chuck Taylor looks at Orange Cassidy, he goes, "We've been friends for 20 years. You know who doesn't have to say that? People who have been friends for 20 years.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. No, actually... Actually, if you have friends of any level of intensity and any intensive, like any degree of time, you just don't ever, you would never say, I've been friends with you for 7 years.
You would never give a time
stamp. We've been friends for 5 years, Jeff. Honestly, whenever anyone says that, it's like they're trying to leverage the time against me. You know, Chris, we've been friends for 10 years. I'm like, oh shit, he's about to ask me for
a favor. He's going to ask me for a favor. I'm going to have to borrow money.
Yeah. to get a new Mitsubishi.
You know, so you trust me, right? That's usually the question after that. I mean, that there are ways that people talk to each other where it's just like, I mean, like Chuck should have looked at Orange and go, and by the way, Chuck Taylor being the emotional leverage for a story about Orange Cassidy.
Earlier this year, he stabbed him in the back. It's like I said this to my roommate. The thing that most
Trent,
annoys
though,
me
not,
about
not Chuck.
Oh, not no. It's you're right. It's not Chuck. Yeah, right. Like that's right. And then, yeah. It was Trent, not Chuck. But like,
I mean, Chuck was written off, and we knew who he was written off, and just to bring him back as an NPC, where it's just like, all right, great. Some office stooge got taken out yet again. When he wasn't even able to come back before. Oh no! What will Orange do now?
Oh, the beloved Chuck Taylor. What's your favorite Chuck Taylor move?
That time he screams.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like one of those things where it's like, I think Chuck Taylor should just look at Orange County and look, snap out of it, start fighting for this company or something like that, because we can't do it backstage.
Right, yeah, like, I mean, and even something like, you know, the Bucks are going to, basically saying, Orange Cassidy, you need to be the leader.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I mean, I think this story's a mess, but, like, I think...
It can be fixed.
It can be fixed, and making Orange Cassidy the clear pro tag and not the Bucks is, I think, like, I would have the Bucks be false heroes in this story.
Well, I think they're going to be heroes eventually, though.
No, I know. They're going to be real heroes, and I would have them be false ones.
Yeah.
I would have people try to go to the Bucks, try to get the Bucks. The Bucks even give false hope.
Yes, they go, we're going to go to, and they just destroyed.
They sell them out. No, they don't even get destroyed.
Oh,
they sell out everybody. They sell them all out. And then it's up to Orange Cassidy to save the day.
Okay, I could go with that too.
You got to make the story darker, 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 right? You know, you got to make the darkness ever darker so that the comeback from that's even better. See, no, I hate the whole appealing to the Young Bucks. Like, you guys are supposed to save this company. Like, they've been doing an impression of a guy who's like a documented rapist for the last 6 months, and you want this guy to be your hero, or you want these guys to be a hero.
Yeah, I was thinking it would be a way to bring Kenny back through the Bucks. That's the only thing I was thinking. But I think Orange should be the hero. But no, Orange is getting destroyed either way because it's probably going to be Darby. Right?
I mean, maybe it's Orange and Darby who are the heroes.
That could be it.
Yeah.
And then Jack Perry remains a villain. I'm here for that, too. I think
he's a villain. Maybe you even have, like, Orange, Darby, and Sammy, the three pillars. Like basically go up against the BCC, try to fight for the soul of the company.
I didn't have anything for Raw necessarily. I had a couple for SmackDown, but if you want to go on something on Raw, go ahead.
Yeah, I ain't got nothing on SmackDown here. I'm trying to think on Raw. Still loving Bronson Reed. I think.
Yes.
I just think he is such a good promo. He is so clearly and articulately motivated and has a way of understanding all of the things that he does. Like it, the performer and also people who are helping to write and guide the character have really thought about making this guy not this hulking beast, but rather this like cerebral monster who's all like more scary because everything's the byproduct of a well thought out plan.
Yeah. No, I like the smart monster. In comic books, they occasionally do this where it's just like this big goof all of a sudden gets genius intelligence, and then all of a sudden there's a character by the name of Blockbuster who was a Batman villain where they did this. I love this trope quite a bit because it's not often seen. When it's done, it's not done well enough. Like, the guy's not really smart enough, but here you believe that Bronson Reed...
He's great. He manipulates Adam Pearce, right? I love a couple of weeks ago when he's sitting down with Adam Pearce and he's being manipulative.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, shit. Give me a monster heel who's conniving and manipulative and like outsmarts people in addition to being an outpowering brute. That's menacing.
Well,
scary.
The problem is they also have another guy doing that right now, and this is going to be one of my SmackDown notes, in Gunther, where he is just cutting. He is cutting Cody Rhodes to the core with his promos about how Cody needs the people, and Cody's really kind of a fake champion compared to him and stuff like that. And then he just goes and just beats his ass whenever Cody gets mad.
But they're different characters.
They
though.
Are.
They are.
Bronson would make a great like henchman for Gunther at some point, if Gunther was going to be like a stable leader or something like that.
I also think their personalities are different enough where, yes, like you could have Gunther and Bronson, where Gunther's the baby face and Bronson's the heel, and because Gunther's all about the prestige of the ring and doing things honorably, and Bronson Reed has demonstrated a much more Machiavellian sort of relationship with stuff. Success is the point, right? Gunther's about prestige. Winning, yeah, you might bet a rule here or there, but like Gunther does not want to win a title on a low blow, right? Like that matters to him. Bronson Reed didn't give a crap about that.
He has a weird ethos as a heel.
Right. Right.
You know, it's kind of like the, again, I'm going to go back to my comic book knowledge, you know, the B villain who doesn't want to kill or doesn't want to kill women or children or something like that. He just wants to rob banks, you know? So it's like, there's a sense of honor about him. And then my last one was the Motor City Machine Guns come in and they win the SmackDown titles almost immediately, which is great. The exception that you haven't really built up. I mean, there are two issues with it. Number one, because of the amount of weekly television and the fact that there are two tag team titles, one on each brand. It's good booking, but does it matter? And it seemed to get over well with the crowd, but it was also done in service of getting Jay and Jimmy Uso back together, which kind of overshadows it a little bit, getting away right from the other bloodline. And it's one of those things where I wonder if it's a negative that, or if it's a positive that is actually undercut by a negative in there, Chris.
Yeah, I tend to think so. I mean, I don't think debuting the Motor City Machine Guns are not a big enough team that a debut in belting does the same thing as if you brought in, you know, like MJF, right?
And
you know,
the
like,
Authors of Pain.
No, well, I'm thinking like in import from another company.
Okay, let's import say, from another. Like,
MJF comes in and wins the Intercontinental title on his debut would right. make some sense, right? Like, you know, you could imagine that. I just don't think the Motor City Machine Guns in the year of our Lord 2024 are super relevant like that. I don't even think they were like relevant like that 10 years ago. I think they had already kind of like, you know, passed a little bit at that point.
They're going to have good matches. They work well. I mean, I think eventually it's going to be a long-term feud with DIY in terms of that, you know, but that's the level they're looked at. They're small guys who have great matches. They'll pop the crowd. They're going to get dwarfed by the Street Profits whenever they get in the ring.
I know. I mean, I guess that's my other question is, are we going to – I guess we got to keep running them as baby faces, but like the speed and pace that those guys are going to have to work at to be baby faces, they're both around 40, right? Like that,
yeah.
They'd have to be really chugging along during those matches to really be baby faces.
So next week we'll do a preview of what's the name of it? Crown Jewel over in the Saudi territory. But now Vader Club from the year of our Lord 1990. Rowdy Roddy Piper versus Mr. Perfect Kurt Hennig from the Holiday Show. I believe it's the Holiday Show, December 28th, 1990, Madison Square Garden. Chris, tell us why you picked this match.
Man, I want some Roddy Piper in my life this week. Earlier this week, I sent something to one of my roommates about Shawn Michaels, and he said, "Why do you hate Shawn Michaels so much?" And I said, "It's because this is a Hitman house." Hitman, Roddy Piper, Mr. Perfect, like these are my bread and butter wrestlers outside of Vader, obviously. I just adore, like, each one of them does something different for me. Like Mr. Perfect and Bret Hart are the kind of technical wrestling and the selling aspect of it. Vader is the power, the spectacle, the brutality element of it for me. Jinsei Shinzaki is kind of like the cool high flying, you know, like the exotic element of it for me. And then Roddy Piper is just one of my favorite promos. I enjoy Roddy Piper's promos, his intensity, his demeanor, and like just his carriage. There's an aura that he throws out in the ring that maybe
he's
other
authentic.
Than, yeah. It feels real. It feels real. It feels very real. And like, for example, if you could time travel 1990 Roddy Piper to face off with Jon Moxley right now, that'd be a sick feud. You know, like there's any number of people that Roddy Piper at 1990 Roddy Piper could be feuding with right now. He probably wouldn't have to change a single thing he said, basically. Well, maybe a few words. He would be able to just slot right in. That's what I like so much about Piper. He sells more than you give, than like a lot of guys who are at that tier. Like Macho would sell like he would, and Piper sold a lot, but like Hogan didn't like selling a lot. Like a lot of those other guys didn't do nearly as much effort wise in the matches.
Here's the weird thing living in this time and watching, you know, as much primetime wrestling on Monday nights as I could, Monday Night Football not being near. I mean, Monday Night Football was big, but I mean, it wasn't huge when I was that age. But, you know, if I liked the team, I'd watch them and I'd record the wrestling. But when he came back in 89, he felt, or at least they treated him on WWF television, like he was kind of washed up. And that he was, you know, he's kind of, he's the legend. He's like a special attraction legend here. And he'd only been gone 2 years, Chris. And that's the most shocking thing to me is I looked up his age and Hennig's age at the time of this match. How old do you think Roddy Piper was at the time of this match?
33.
He was 36.
36.
But he always... I mean, it was always to me like he was in his 40s during this time. And because WWE always treated him like, well, you know, because it always felt like it was forever since WrestleMania 1. And we're at WrestleMania 5, you know, during this year. Kurt Hennig, by the way, 32 at the time of this match. He was only 4 years younger, and he felt like the fresh new guy in WWF. So it's kind of amazing to me because Piper had been wrestling since, you know, the 70s. And he's here, you know, in 89. It's felt like he had been around forever. But you realize that back then, it's like they're getting involved 16, 17 and starting to work the road and, you know, being on TV at 18, 19. And you know, health and nutrition has changed so much that people stay. I mean, WWE.
36 is fairly old if you started at 16 and you have 20 years on the road.
Yes. And 36 now is. Oh, you've been in WWE for a year and a half after doing a few years on the indies type of a thing, which is kind of amazing given like the number of people on the roster right now who are over 40. Other things, I always, and weird thing is Kurt Hennig and Scott Hall are the two guys you go, those are guys that WWE did or WWF did something with that you could have never expected from watching their old stuff. Like if you watch Scott Hall in NWA and AWA, he's good. He's not Razor Ramon charismatic good. And Hennig in AWA especially, coming over and getting this Mr. Perfect gimmick. Nobody thought Kurt Hennig was a great promo before coming into the WWF. And now he's thought of as an all-time promo. I, for one, adore the body glove wrestling tights. Big around this time as well, in 1989 at least, or coming in, there was Living Color doing Cult of Personality and Vivid, the album coming out. Corey Glover wore the same kind of outfit. So I always liked how non-traditional Mr. Perfect and the body glove suits were. And I guess it was always kind of a rib that they'd get ripped, so you'd have to go buy new ones, etc. The match itself, I adore. I'll let you start and then I'll go into it.
So this match is a fairly uncommon heel versus heel sort of scenario where you have the new younger heel, Mr. Perfect, the Intercontinental Champion, going up against, as you mentioned, and this is I think
is he a heel here? Because I thought he was a baby face. I thought that he was still fighting against. I mean, he had just fought Bad News Brown.
So he is a baby face, but like it.
He's a heelish baby face.
Right, right. His baby face origins are of one of a heel, and that's what we see at the beginning of the match, right?
Yes.
Henning tries to do the heel playbook, and Roddy Piper's like, dude, I read that book. I edited that book. I've added chapters into that book, culminating into a tremendous spot where it culminates in a tremendous spot where Piper has gotten the better of Henning for a minute. Henning's on his hands and knees, and Piper's just toying with him, slapping him in the head. Get up, do something. And Henning makes one last desperation heel move and goes for a low blow, and Piper grabs the arm and blocks that. It's like, no, and beels him over there, which then forces the action in the second beat of the match where Henning has to go above and beyond to get the edge. So he removes the turnbuckle pad.
I loved Roddy Piper's sell of getting hit in this turnbuckle. And even Gorilla's like, oh,
he appears to have gone. Yeah, we're not supposed to
use can't say that word.
To
your point, though, it's awesome that Piper as a character, even though he's a baby face, it's one of those things where I didn't change. You're just rooting for me now type of a things where it's like, he doesn't become a stupid baby face. He's like, I know all these tricks. And yeah, him blocking that low blow. I mean, he's going out there, he's hitting a guy with a chair. He's throwing him over the top rope. He's basically Boogie Woogie Man Valiant in a way, in that he's doing all the heel stuff but getting cheered for it. And of course, dumbass Hebner in the ring is letting this all go. You know, and commentary's not really commenting on it until Lord Alfred, until the second beat, when it's Henning's turn to take Piper out of the ring and do all the same things. He hits him with a chair, and Lord Alfred Hayes, well, 50-50. fair play. Well, not doing it. And then of course, like the one thing that just didn't make sense to me was Hebner
the
grabbing
count out.
Well, no. I think I can explain that one. But it's the Henning on the top rope and Hebner stopping him from jumping off of it, you know, with like a axe handle or something. I think the count out was more they didn't tell the story on commentary, but it's that he racked himself on the turnbuckle where he took the pad off. So the five count happened. You remember when they used to count to five and you get DQ'd for a top rope move?
Yep, I think
that was the count.
Well, that's okay. So, and I was going to say that also gets back to an older rule about top rope. Which is that the top rope is technically illegal, and that referees are like technically it's illegal. That's why the rest like get off the top rope, get out the, but like it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. Okay. No. That's good knowledge that I had forgotten, because I was sitting there when Piper threw Hennig over the top rope. I was like,
I was waiting Bill
somebody,
Watts.
Somebody should know. Well, no, but I mean, even in Jim Crockett, that was always the way to get heat with the DQ. And it used to be a DQ in WWF. And I was surprised that Gorilla didn't mention it at all. It's like, but because I think they were trying to give the story that his momentum took him over the top rope, which is always the cop out for it too. It's like, oh, his momentum did that to him. He wasn't actually thrown over the top, but this was also like, I think Royal Rumble had been a couple years old by now. And so throwing people over the top rope was usually as kind of a, this was usually a harbinger of it. I believe that happened in this next year's Royal Rumble, but don't quote me on that. But yeah, you try to remember all these old school rules that they used to live by, which used to make wrestling easier to tell stories in. It's like when I heard count out, I was like, okay, were they counting to 10? And then he never really got back in the ring to get up on the top rope. But I think what they meant was the five count at the top of when you're on the top of the rope, if you don't jump off from there, that's officially a count out type of deal. Cause even the announcers were like, why is the bell ringing?
Yeah. Right. No, it's a strange out, but God, it's such a fun match. I love Piper's punches.
Yes.
I think he just has a really good, convincing, I mean, convincing in the wrestling parlance. Like, the punches look like they mean something. They don't seem like, whoop, wah! You know, like
they look real for
they
a
look
lot.
Real.
I mean, yeah. it's a Jerry Lawler, Bobby Eaton school, you know, where the old school guys goes, you need to know how to throw a real punch. And occasionally you need to take a few real punches to know how it feels so you can sell it properly. Like, for me, the best part of this match, I loved how the first beat was all Kurt Hennig selling for Piper, where Piper was just, I'm a badder man than you, and you're the new bad guy on the block, kind of. But he was just like, yeah, I know all the tricks, and like the eye poke when he's down against the, and Hennig's doing some interesting selling. Like, he got punched, and then he tried to do the thing where he bounced on all three ropes before he went down. Like, he is obviously playing to the back of the room and overselling a bit, but it's still kind of awesome.
Both of them that's actually what makes this work, is like, they're both overselling, but because they're both doing it, it just kind of feels like that's where
it feels
we're
like
at.
That's the reality of the world. Yeah. Like the Piper sell on the turnbuckle shot is absolutely preposterous, where he's going into convulsions at times, and you're just like, and he's continuing to do it almost like it was like a bit where it's like, how long
it goes on. Yeah, it crosses the line like three times.
How long can you do this before the crowd starts to boo you for doing it, kind of a thing, or before somebody corpses in the ring because you're being ridiculous about it?
I was hoping he was gonna spasm his way back to his feet for it.
Well, he did that. Oh, it was the jumping knee lifts, where Piper no sells his, and goes back and does it to perfect, and they both just lay down there, all of a sudden being knocked out from it. The other thing that is classic, Hennig, that his standing drop kick is freaking amazing.
So good.
Oh.
His elevation,
All I can think of is like the old WrestleMania arcade game, or WrestleFest arcade game, where you played perfect and hearing the guy say, Mr. Perfect, drop kick kind of a thing, and just watching that drop kick. It's so pure. I love it when he locks his hands on the perfect plex, because the whole thing was, when he locks his hands, it's unbreakable. And of course, Piper, being, you know, a main event babyface, can kick out of that. I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, no, I did too. I love Mr. Perfect. I think an underappreciated title picture historically is the Intercontinental title 90 to 91.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good stuff happening in this time frame.
Yeah, this is when it gets to be classic, because like, and then people start getting member berries about, oh man, remember when Tito Santana and Savage used to fight for this title? Because Perfect and Hart and Piper and all those guys just made that title worth something again. And it's, yeah, no, I really liked it. It's going to be my turn. I'm going to be looking at some Halloween Havocs. Might be Halloween Havoc 89. That's a favorite of mine, but we'll see what it is, and I'll put it on the internet, on the Twitter feed. We'll end it there. This has been Shake Them Ropes. You can follow me on X at CrapGame13. You can follow the show at Shake Them Ropes, all one word. You can follow Chris on Instagram at DOCTOR_NOV. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. I also do another audio show. It's called The Dynamite Show. We go live on YouTube about 20 minutes after Dynamite ends. We do a thorough deconstruction of that show. Drops in your podcatchers for free the next day on the Fight Game Media RSS feed, and myself and Paul Ace Fontaine. Chris has other ventures and other socials that he will direct you to now.
Yeah, if you're in the Albuquerque area this week and you want to see my music band play, we are called the Asteroids. You can follow us on Instagram, and you can see us at the Tap Room in downtown historic Albuquerque this Wednesday night, 6 to 8 p.m., and next Wednesday night, 6 to 8 p.m. at the Tap Room in downtown historic Albuquerque. Happy to be there for the next couple of weeks.
And your Spotify?
Spotify, Chris Novembrino. Go check it out. I have new songs largely recorded, but I just need to finish them up. I've now completed the move, so there'll be even more stuff coming out in the not so distant future. So sub up, subscribe, share the links, listen to the links.
Get your stuff in, Chris. Come on.
You just, you know, take lessons from me too. You know, you message me on Instagram. Do that. Listen to my shit.
We'll see you next week.
You may not realize it, but every minute of every day, you're enjoying your First Amendment freedoms. You can wear what you want, give out your opinion for free, even if it's unpopular. Listen to your playlist. You can put a sign out on your front lawn that says, "Vote for Bigfoot, someone you can believe in." Pray to the God of your choice, or don't. You have the right to hang with a posse that thinks like you do. Tell the government what you think about its policies. They're the freedoms that let you be you, and they're all brought to you by the First Amendment. Learn more at freedomforum.org.
Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is, how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.